Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
Okay, welcome back. And we are delighted to have back with us today Larry Schweikart. He's a film producer, musician, historian, author. He's the author of Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Decline. He's the co-author, along with Michael Allen, of the New York Times number one bestseller, A Patriot's History of the United States. He's been on just about all of the media places, including Glenn Beck, Al Jazeera, earlier with Rush Limbaugh. And in 2019, he founded the Wild World of History curriculum website. And there is a picture of that website. So you can go to wildworldofhistory.com and check out a lot of stuff there. So, Larry, good to have you back. How are you, friend?
Hi, it's good to be back. Yeah, I just got back from a homeschool convention. Boy, am I tired. Those homeschoolers wear you out.
You know? Well, that's good stuff. Thank you for your time. Well, what's your take on President Putin winning another six-year term?
Oh, not surprising. Despite what our media likes to say about him, he's very popular in Russia. You don't need to rig that election for him to win. I'm sure, though, he had his finger on some scales in various provinces. But, one interesting thing people miss is that while Napoleon and Putin were, Napoleon was viewed as this dictator and Putin's viewed as this dictator, they do hold elections, something they don't really hold in China and some other places in the world. So you got to at least give it to them for having the pretense of democracy, right?
So therefore, does a credible opponent have any possibility?
Probably, but you've got to remember Putin kind of embodies two parts of old Russia. First of all, whether he's still a communist or not, I think he's a communist at heart. And there's a lot of Russians to this day who kind of yearn for the old days of communism. And then you've got all the new Russians that are pretty happy with the economic growth they've had there, contrary to all the Western sanctions. Russia's done pretty well. They found new trading partners. They don't need the West. And so I think that shocks outsiders, especially the liberals in the West, who want to think that Russia's collapsing. Russia's doing pretty well. And so Putin kind of embodies both those sides. And so far, nobody else has stepped forward to really kind of claim both sides of that mantle.
Let me ask you a wild question. Can you give us the real meaning behind President Putin's push in Ukraine?
As best I understand, I'm not a Russian historian. I did study Russian in college, thinking it would be the wave of the future back in the 70s. But my best understanding is that there are several areas in Ukraine, such as Crimea, Donbass, and some others, that were heavily Russified. They had ethnic Russians who did not want to be a part of Ukraine. It's kind of like what happened to many of the provinces that were divided up by the Treaty of Vienna at the end of World War I, which I talk about in Patriot's History of Globalism, and how map lines were just kind of moved around without ever asking people what they really wanted or what country they wanted to be associated with. And so as a result, you had a lot of ethnic Russians and or people who favored Russia trapped inside Ukraine. And Putin is just saying, oh, I'm just turning them back into Russians. That's what they always wanted to be, which is pretty much the case.
Is there a religious component to this?
No. It's interesting. In 1814, at the Congress of Vienna, Alexander I, people don't know this, he was deeply Christian, but he had this kind of weird variation of Christianity where he wanted to Christianize again all of Europe. He thought they needed a revival, and he was going to bring it to them with Russian troops. There's none of that involved here with Putin. What Putin has done, which is another reason that so many Russian people like him, is he has completely relaxed all of the restrictions on the Christian church. And the Greek Orthodox Church is flourishing there. Missionaries are allowed in. I don't know if it's to the degree they would want or not, but I know they're allowed in. and crusades can take place and so on. Russia is very strong pro-family. Russia is very strong in opposing homosexual rights. So there's a lot of things within Russia that if you weren't a liberal Westerner, you'd go, wow, that's a pretty good country to be in.
Why have so many American companies pulled out?
First of all, I think they're intimidated by the wokeness, by the liberals. You can't be a part of Russia. Russia's evil. Russia's bad. And rather than fight that, they just said, okay, our business in Russia isn't such that we're going to take a big hit by leaving. That's one thing. Another issue here that nobody else seems to get, I don't know why this is so hard to figure out. Western liberal media hate Russia because Russia is no longer communist. They can't get over the fact that the Russians, the largest nation in history to ever accept communism, said, "Nyet, it's no good. We don't want it anymore." And the Western governments, and especially the Western media, hate that about Russia. That's one reason they hate Putin so much, is even if he internally is still a communist at heart, his policies are not communistic policies, and that just drives them wild. They hate it that their grand design of communism just kind of fell apart in front of their eyes.
Former President Trump said he could settle the war between Russia and Ukraine in 24 hours. Do you have any idea what he's got in mind?
I don't, but, you know, I didn't know how he was going to deal with little Rocket Man over there in Korea either, and yet he did. Right? They stopped testing missiles for the longest time when President Trump was in office. President Trump goes over there, becomes the first president ever to walk across the demilitarized zone line and enter North Korea, and they become like good buds. So I don't know exactly how he would do it, but I do trust that he would do it because he did it in North Korea. He and Jared Kushner did it to an extent in the Middle East. And basically, he exerts pressure on both sides. Right now, no one is exerting pressure on green screen Zelensky, as I call him. He's given free rein and all of our money to do whatever he wants.
So why haven't we asked for an accountability, a invoice of the money we've given him?
Oh, come on now. You know that. It's because, A, there are kickbacks involved to many, many people in Congress and the House and in the Senate. They're just flat out getting money from these defense contractors. And B, very little of this money actually goes to where it's supposed to go, i.e. defending Ukraine, and goes into this giant corrupt black market of money. It's a black market bank. Over there in Europe, which is another reason why nobody wants to see it go away. It's kind of becoming a black market version of Switzerland. So they have no interest in shutting down this den of corruption.
Do you think Ukraine could become a two-state solution?
I think it's going to have to be. They can't win. Even the Western media now is admitting there's no way they can win this war. They're going to run out of men pretty soon. The French are already sending in troops to be rear line support because the Ukes need those men up front. And that's not a good sign, is to have the French in the rear, although historically perhaps that's where they belong. at any rate, Russia's not going to leave these areas. And the people there don't want them to leave those areas. So it's going to come down to somebody like a President Trump saying to green screen Zelensky, "Listen, bud, there's no more money. There's no more support. I will help you get a two-state solution here, but you're going to have to give up on this one."
Where does that leave NATO?
Well, it probably leaves NATO where it should be, which is at this point disbanded. NATO was a World War II anti-communist, anti-Soviet Union creation, and it served its purpose. It was very good for that. But we do not have to worry about the Russians invading Germany. That's just nonsense. And they won't attack Poland unless the Poles get aggressive. And by the way, the hatred between the Poles and the Russians goes way back, hundreds of years. These nations hate each other. So there's no reason to have NATO today. NATO fulfills no global purpose other than to serve as kind of a weapons dump for American weapons manufacturers.
Okay. This is a good transition to go into your Patriot's history of globalism, which seems to be so much in the news in various ways. How would you, Larry, define globalism?
Globalism, and I ask this of a lot of my followers on Twitter, what do you think is globalism? And the simple answer is control of the many by a few elites who have no concern for national boundaries, ethnicities, or ideas. So it's really an anti-national movement.
That's always left me with an interesting thought. Those who support it, who are not part of the elite, did they have any idea that the elite at the end is going to step on them?
Yeah, this guy Noah Harari, right? You know about this guy?
Yes.
So we call him the false prophet. The WEF calls him the prophet. I think he's the false prophet. And he's one of these guys that says in the future we're going to have serfs and slaves, and we'll have people at the top. And if you don't fit into the serf or slave category, you might as well be dead. I mean, he doesn't flat say you might as well die, but that's what he means. These people have no idea what they're supporting. It's like many of the Western media in the 1930s who would go along and support Joe Stalin's Soviet Russia, talk about what a wonderful paradise it was. And when they would visit Russia, they would be escorted on highly controlled trains that would go only into the best parts of Moscow, and they'd be decked out with food and everything, and they'd never see the starving masses, they'd never see the oppressed people, and then they'd write about how wonderful Russia is without realizing that if the Soviets had their way, they would be ground to dust just like everybody else.
Let me take a break here. We'll come back. I want to dig into this a little more. Let me just say to our viewers and listeners, a couple of books here that Larry has put out. The one that we're talking about today is The Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Decline. There's a picture of the cover of the book on the screen. You may also want to check out his best-selling book, and that is The Patriot's History of the United States. These are two amazing resources. And you can go to the wildworldofhistory.com, and there's a picture of that landing page. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
We'll be back to this week's interview in just a few seconds. In the meantime, we want to let you know that you can watch this interview, plus many more exclusive interviews that happen this week on the Dove's Daily TV and radio show by visiting our website, thedove.us. And while you're there, sign up for our free daily devotional, The Word for You Today. 3 months of daily readings that will connect you with God's Word. Now, back to the show.
Always a delight to have with us Larry Schweikart. He's a film producer, historian, author. We're talking about one of his books, his latest one called The Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Decline. There's a picture of the cover of the book. Check out his other book that he co-authored with, and that is The Patriot's History of the United States. He does have a website that talks about all this, and that is the wildworldofhistory.com. And there's a picture of that landing page. Again, Larry, thank you for your time. I value it greatly. You're a fascinating guy.
My pleasure. Yep, good.
There seems to be a all-out war as we head towards November 5th between the globalization of the United States and the retention of capitalism. Mm-hmm. Is that the battle lines?
That's one of them. They're advancing kind of on multiple fronts here, sort of like the Red Army in World War II. They're trying to destroy America's sovereignty of borders by, as your previous guest was talking about, allowing in all the illegal criminal aliens. That's the correct term for these people. And secondly, they're trying to destroy America's economic viability, especially energy independence, by foisting upon us this so-called green energy that isn't green and doesn't give you any energy. We learned that almost all these technologies are horrible for the environment. They're as toxic as you can possibly get. And they're trying to roll back capitalism through wokeism, which is not concerned with profits. Anyone who understands capitalism or free markets understands that it is profits and a focus on profits that forces companies to be socially conscious. That is, they do the right thing, not because they're all wonderful people, but because they're forced to by the market. And once you start introducing wokeness into this, you're taking away the profit margin and the imperative to make profits. We're seeing that in Hollywood today like crazy. And it looks like Disney, for example, is finally getting the message. I saw some news yesterday that they're canceling a bunch of movies, especially these Marvel woke movies in their latest phase four, phase five. They're canceling a lot of them because the last half dozen they put out have been absolute disasters financially.
Rob Reiner, better known as Meathead, his documentary failed miserably.
Yes. And they have one that's also collapsing very badly, not Disney, but it's an indie film called The Society of Magical Negroes, which is this very woke kind of thing. And it's a disaster. Echo was a disaster. Ant-Man didn't do well. Doctor Strange didn't do great. The Marvels did terrible. And they're finding out that all of these new woke shows in what is laughingly called the MCU, instead of the Marvel Comics universe, it's the MCU, that they're all failing. And this guy, Nelson Peltz, is hammering the Disney board and may very well gain multiple seats on the Disney board to force them to be more conscious of market demands, what people want. They don't want a bunch of woke. They want stuff they can take their kids to.
Yeah. Do you think we have more rising of globalism in the United States before we get into the decline, or is the pushback starting?
Oh, the pushback is starting. I think it started big. It started about 2 years ago. In terms of education and so forth, we saw in Florida that not only did Governor DeSantis take this on in terms of Disney and a lot of the school boards, Florida has gotten rid of all DEI in their public universities, saving, ready for this, $53 million. That's how much money they were spending on DEI stuff. We're seeing story after story about corporate America kind of ditching or slimming down their DEI programs. We saw all sorts of elections starting to trend against wokeness and DEI, whether it's school board elections, whether it's pro-gun votes. We'll see in November how far this trickles down into the House and the Senate. If the Republicans can pick up the Senate, they only need one more seat because West Virginia is going to go Republican. And if they can hold the House, which I think they will, I think they'll expand it by 5 to 10, then we'll see how far this goes. Because the shift is not just replacing Democrats with Republicans, but we saw something like 17 or 18 Republican rhinos resign, and they will probably be replaced by a majority, if not all, of more Trumpy MAGA kind of people who are, you know, outspoken against woke. So we'll see where this goes.
There's another part of this equation. I realize that part of globalism is the border issue. I get that. Part of it is wokeness. I get that. But Friday, we saw another level. We've been toying around with this, but it just reached another level with the decision coming out of Fulton County on the District Attorney Willis case. What is happening to our judiciary? What's happening to the judicial system in this country?
Well, you know, President Trump made astounding inroads on the judiciary at both the appellate courts, the circuit court, and obviously Supreme Court levels. But you have these blue cities, New York, Atlanta, Dallas, which is where I think originally Alex Jones was charged, and Chicago. And a conservative of any stripe on any issue is not going to get a fair trial in these areas. George Soros put a lot of money about 5 years ago into county prosecutors, DAs, that kind of stuff. And it's paying off for them in that all of these trials for President Trump, except for the one in Florida with Judge Cannon, are taking place in front of judges or juries that won't possibly give him a fair trial. So what the judge in Atlanta did was split the baby. literally. And what you know, if you split the baby, is the baby dies. Justice, baby justice died there, as David Free said. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to matter in the long run. This case is not going to come to trial before the election. The one in Florida won't come to trial before the election. Possibly the one in New York, which is not as big a deal, won't come to trial before the election. And so really the election is the trial. The people say, we want President Trump back. Supreme Court, if they haven't already ruled, go, yep, he's immune, everything's okay, and that'll be that. Or he can just pardon himself. And part of me almost hopes that Alvin Bragg gets a conviction in New York, and on a very small level, that President Trump is actually sentenced to jail for a couple of days or a week or whatever, and that he has to be sworn into office in an orange jumpsuit, surrounded by Secret Service guards, with Judge Roberts there in his cloak in the prison. That would be a pay-per-view event that would knock every Super Bowl off the charts. I mean, it'd be the biggest watched thing in human history.
Your mind. I'm trying to get into your head there a little bit on that. That's pretty wild. Do you think there's another test that we may see sooner, and that's the race for the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate in Ohio? That could be a little of a bell ringer, too, don't you think?
No, I don't. This is, if I had to call it right now, Sherrod Brown stays in office. I hate to say that, but he's proven to be a survivor. And so far, Republicans have never really run anybody solid against him. And I don't think Moreno is the guy. I hope he is. But I don't think he is. I mean, if they had run J.D. Vance against him, Vance would have won that race. Moreno is not in the same class as J.D. Vance. Likewise, the guy they have up in Montana against John Tester is just, I don't think he can do it. I hope I'm wrong in both cases. Neither of those guys, Brown or Tester, should be anywhere near the U.S. Senate. But they are survivors. Honestly, I think our best chance of getting a majority in the Senate is going to be Arizona, where we've had all sorts of polls all across the spectrum. One said that Ruben Gallegos was going to win, that Gallegos would win a three-way race, that Lake would win a three-way race, and the latest said Lake would win a two-way race. I don't know. Richard Barris is one of the few people I trust on polling. He hasn't yet polled Arizona's Senate race.
You're leaning Lake or not?
Too soon to tell. You know, the whole thing was upset by Kyrsten Sinema, or as I nickname her, Enema, by Sinema pulling out of the race. And if she's in it, it's a totally different race, because a lot of conservative Democrats have to decide, do I really want to support a socialist like Gallegos, or do I want to stand on principle and support Sinema? We'll see. It's too soon to call on that one. And by the way, as I think I mentioned last time, President Trump is just killing it in these polls. In 2020, he did not lead in a single big national poll ever. Now he leads in all of them. I think the RCP average is over 3. But when you get into the individual state polling, even those states that he lost, like California or New York, where he lost California by almost 30 points, he's within 13 in California now. He's within 10 in New York. Is he going to win those states? No. But the fact that he is polling across the board, Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Nevada, even Minnesota, He's polling right. He's okay. In the lead in all those, or in the case of Minnesota, just a point or two down.
30 seconds. Who's going to be the next minority leader in the Senate?
Soon.
Okay. We'll see. Larry, you're fascinating. Let's stay connected.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. Let me say to our viewers and listeners, check out his website, wildworldofhistory.com. Check out his two books, A Patriot's History of the United States. And of course, the one we've been talking about, A Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Its Decline. Check that out. Thank you, Larry. God bless you, friend. Stay in the fight.
Yep. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.